Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Grad Chat by PhD Balance, where we talk about topics of grad school beyond the academic research and that may be a bit more difficult to talk about in our day to day. I'm your host, Linda, and I'm currently finishing up my master's in food science in Ireland. And for PhD Balance, I am the Grad Chat lead and a Twitter coordinator. If you like what you see here, check out the PhD Balance YouTube channel and Anchor FM for more Grad Chats. And don't forget to subscribe for notifications about when we go live. Our topic today is navigating academia as a queer and trans person, and I'm super excited to welcome our guest, Skylar Borges. Skylar is a fourth-year PhD student in astronomy and planetary science at Northern Arizona University. Their dissertation research focuses on astrobiology. It's super cool. Specifically, they study Antarctic microbial maps as potential analogs for life on Mars and exoplanets. And over the course of their graduate experience, Skylar has felt very alone as a result of their identities and values. And as a result, they have been actively involved in numerous efforts to provide a support network for those with marginalized identities in STEM, including Thrive Lifeline, a trans-owned grassroots crisis hotline staffed for and by marginalized people in STEM. So welcome, Skylar. We're so pleased to have you here on Grad Chat to discuss your experiences. Is there anything else you'd like to add to your intro?
I don't think so, but yeah, thank you for the nice introduction.
Awesome. I guess we'll dive right into it then. I half mentioned what you study. So I know we're going to talk a bit about field work, which is connected to it. So why don't you properly explain what you study?
I study a mouthful. I basically look at these extremophile organisms, which are just organisms that live in very extreme environmental conditions in the Antarctic. And I'm actually using these communities to understand how life on Mars and exoplanets could exist in both past and the present. So my research involves a lot of different components. I do remote sensing work and modeling work and field work and lab work. So a lot of different things. It's a very interdisciplinary dissertation.
Wow, that is so much. I guess one thing we are going to talk about is, or that we wanted to touch upon is the fieldwork part of it. So I guess why don't you tell us a little bit about what fieldwork looks like for your project?
Yeah, so I've actually completed like the fieldwork that I'm planning to do for my dissertation. I did field work my first year of my PhD, and that involved going to the McMurdo Dry Valleys of Antarctica, and these particular valleys are located across the ocean from the McMurdo base station, which is one U.S. station in Antarctica. It's the largest U.S. base. And so, these dry valleys are often used as an analog for Mars just because they're really cold. There's a lot of UV radiation flux hitting the surface of these valleys. And it's an overall very dry climate as well as being very water limited. And so the microbial communities that I study are present in the streams in some of these valleys. And these streams form as a result of glaciers surrounding these valleys, like melting, but the melt only occurs for 10 weeks of the austral summer. So most of the year, these organisms are actually in their dormant state and are only really metabolizing for 10 weeks of the year, which is pretty interesting and cool. But yeah, doing Antarctic fieldwork is a whole another type of fieldwork. I have a degree in geology, so I did a couple of fieldwork, a lot of fieldwork, I guess, in undergrad. And I spent a summer in Italy doing fieldwork my third year of college as well for a full semester. And that was also a pretty remote experience. We were in like the Apennines of central Italy. But yeah, doing Antarctic fieldwork is a whole nother type of remote fieldwork ball game, I guess.
Yeah, I know fieldwork can be, let's say, can come with its own top challenges wherever you are. But when you are in such a remote area, remote location, I'd imagine there is a whole other, I guess, dimension when you're a minority or a marginalized part of a marginalized group. I guess, what is your experience, thoughts, opinions? I don't know how to phrase that.
Yeah, it's yeah, for sure. It's a whole nother added level, I think, of a very intense and dangerous experience, potentially really dangerous for some folks as well. I have a lot of privilege. I'm white and I'm like, I benefit from cis privilege. Like, I'm not cis and I don't identify as such, but people often perceive me as the gender I was assigned at birth. And so I definitely have a lot of privilege, especially in comparison to others in the trans and queer communities. And so, like, I can only really speak to my experiences with the understanding that it probably could be a lot worse. My experiences could have been potentially more dangerous for those with more intersecting marginalized identities. But in my experience doing field work and remote field work in general, it can be pretty isolating and emotionally exhausting and draining, having to hide all the time because you don't know who's safe to talk to. And even your peers can be challenging to talk to about these topics. And you're very much removed from all of your communities, and especially in the Antarctic, like, the internet is really restricted to certain personnel. So back on the McMurdo base, it was you really had a hard time getting onto the internet in general, but then also you can only make calls via a satellite phone. And so I did have a couple of phone calls with my family while I was in the field. That was nice. And one of my best friends in the world, who I could have conversations with and kind of just like take a moment to be like, whew, like, it's nice to talk to somebody like me, or, you know, to talk about specific, trans and queer topics, because, it can be really isolating and lonely. And it definitely, I think, especially towards the end of my field season, took a toll on my mental health, which definitely played into some of the relationships I had with my colleagues in doing field work. It became pretty noticeable that I was not as happy and bubbly as I usually am to a few of them, which was hard to even try to fake a lot of the times. Thankfully, I did meet another person who was based out of a McMurdo station, who came into the field with us, who was also queer, and she and her wife had just gotten married or something, but was very open to like talking about that in the field. And that was like hugely, it was a big deal for me, because I was like, oh my goodness, there's another person, hi. And then she would leave and I'd be like, bye. So, but even in McMurdo, it was, it's hard. I think, especially now, a lot of women are speaking up about the sexual harassment and abuse that they've faced in the field, especially in Antarctica, and especially around Dave Marchand, who was a huge, he abused a lot of people, a lot of women in the field. And so knowing that going in was also pretty like stressful, I guess, because I also wasn't as connected to with people who knew like who was safe and who wasn't. I made a friend at the McMurdo station, in the fire station specifically, who would always kind of watch out for me and the other grad student who were there, which was pretty nice. But there was definitely a night that I was going back to my dorm, and or yeah, because you have little dorm rooms in McMurdo. And I think my friend, the other grad student who went down with me, she was going to, there are a couple bars in McMurdo, just two, and she was going to go out, and sometimes they have like karaoke nights and special events going on, but we were sharing a room together, and I think she was out, but I was like trying to stay in, and all I was doing is I was going from my room to like the water, like, drinking fountain, and like filling up my water bottle, and some like dude just comes by and starts hitting on me, and I was like, this is a very uncomfortable experience. And so there were a lot of interactions where it was pretty weird to be the object of a lot of men's attention. In general, a very uncomfortable experience. And I would imagine that it would, you know, it's a similar, I guess, experience for cis women, but particularly uncomfortable for me as well, being gay or lesbian and non-binary and trans. And so I was just like, I don't, what is this? But then also there were a lot of, I think, explicit assumptions, a lot of conversations around heteronormativity and cisgender and like all this stuff, and still equating even in the field certain restrooms to being like women's and men's. And I was like, we are in the field, we are in the most remote location we could ever be in, why are we like assigning gender to these like bathrooms that anybody can use? Yeah, and I guess we were kind of lucky that in that regard that we were at like a field station, an established field station, as opposed to being completely remote, and that would have been like a hugely different experience, I would assume. Like the whole logistics of interacting and eating and, you know, going to the bathroom and stuff like that. But you don't have a lot of privacy. And it can be really uncomfortable, like going to the bathroom in general. In the Antarctic, there's no vegetation, there's no trees, there's just rocks. So every single time I'd have to go to the bathroom, and me and the other grad student would do it too, but we would just like hike as far as we can so that way we can like hide behind a huge rock and go to the bathroom. And at one point in the field season, somebody on our team had talked about how, you know, he's been in the field with other people before, and they've like gone to the bathroom like in like right behind him, and it like shouldn't be a big deal for us, essentially. And I was like, I understand where you're coming from, but that's not something that I'm comfortable with. And when I was doing field work, I was closeted, like I hadn't told anybody on my team. I was very, even my first year of grad school, I was closeted. I was very nervous to like talk to other people. It was a new environment, a new space. I didn't know anybody. Luckily are other graduate students in my department who are LGBTQ, but I hadn't had like an established relationship with them either at that point in time. And academia is really good at making you feel isolated and really good at instilling a very individualistic mindset into graduate students in general too. So it was doing fieldwork in the Antarctic was it was pretty like stripping, I guess, there was a lot of erasure. And I was really particularly lucky in a lot of regards. but like it could have been a lot worse. And especially doing field work, I know it's a particularly, it's a coming up a field of research that I think a lot of people right now want to know more about and collect more data of, specifically of LGBTQ people in the field and their fieldwork experiences, which I think is really important because, yes, like while like the experiences that a lot of cis white women have had in the field are still abusive and still really scary and inappropriate and unacceptable, there are also a lot of other experiences of people who don't have white or cis privilege, or even, you know, the privilege of being heterosexual, to like those experiences are still happening in the field. And it's great that we're raising awareness of issues in general, especially for women, but the experiences for trans people especially too are just hugely different and, in my opinion, more dangerous than for a lot of cis women. And especially doing field work internationally and with people you don't know, which is how field work happens a lot of the time.
Yeah. You mentioned so many things there that I want to touch upon. I guess one thing that is really important to talk about is, I guess, just trying to think about field work as a trans person, because also a queer person, because there's so many different aspects that it could affect. Obviously, you were in an area where maybe there is a certain type of dress that people would wear, but it's still something that you have to consider. You were sharing a room, that is something that has to be considered, and bathrooms are obviously something that has to be considered. But I guess it's very easy to get bogged down in what the nice safe environment of the university, where hopefully everyone has gender neutral bathrooms and can identify and express themselves how they'd like. But I guess, what kind of even advice do you have for how people can navigate asking questions about what they need to consider for field work, or what kind of things do people need to be aware of before they start it? That's a big question. Let me rephrase that. Is there certain pieces of advice that you'd have for trans people that are just starting out in a, where they know they're going to need to do field work, for how they should go about getting information, you know, before they even start it?
Yeah. There have actually been quite a few people who've, I think are a little bit more well-versed and experienced in giving advice in this particular realm. I think, you know, whatever advice I can give is not the full experience, and because of the privilege that I do have, would not be applicable or would not be appropriate for everybody. And so I think it can be really hard to know. So what I would say, and that I hope people take with a grain of salt, and that they talk to other people in STEM who are doing a lot more work at the forefront of like advocating for trans people in the field, and especially both in the gender and race intersection. So just like, you know, be mindful of those resources that do exist, and they do, and they're out there, and there are people doing important work. And so for, I think, like me, and what I would say is that, like having a way to still be in touch with who you are is really important. And it can be really difficult when you're isolated and you're trying to hide who you are all the time and constantly anxious about like if somebody's going to find out, or, you know, especially with living with another person or going to the bathroom and like all this stuff. And so it can be really hard to stay in touch with yourself and with who you are, or with something that you can hold on to. And so if there is somebody that you trust who's doing field work with you, like being able to either talk to them about things that maybe don't even have to explicitly relate to your trans identity, but something that is integral to who you are or to values that you have as well could be really important, but that's not easy for everybody. And that wasn't my case either. So, yeah, even if it's a picture of a friend or of, you know, chosen family, or, you know, music can be really helpful as well. It's one thing that I was able to take into the field with me. And so, like listening to music that is really validating or, that helps you stay connected with who you are, I think emotionally could be really helpful in those situations. Yeah, there are some people who've done whole workshops on like traveling while trans and like all these other things. And so I guess could only more speak to like the emotional side and being really mindful and trying to have hidden ways of connecting with yourself more, so that way you can also emotionally get through it, because it's really taxing to be anxious all the time and to be worried all the time. And especially if you're doing field work for long periods of time. So I was in the field for like 2 months-ish, which is a long field season. It's rough. And so I think those are some ways to emotionally get through a field season while staying connected with who you are and stuff like that. So that wasn't the best answer to your question.
I think it's a great answer. I think your emotional health, your mental health is really important. And I think also reiterating what you said earlier in trying to assert boundaries and keep your boundaries where you're comfortable. Like you said, you know, even though people were saying you could go to the bathroom right there, you were saying you weren't comfortable with that. Knowing where your boundaries are and keeping with them, even if there's other people saying, oh, well, you can just do whatever. And you're like, well, this is what my whatever is. This is what I'm comfortable with, is very important.
I think that's really hard to do. You know, in academia, we like you are taught the exact opposite of that. But I feel like we, as like LGBTQ people, we need to take up our time and energy and space, and we need to like really create healthy boundaries for getting through, because otherwise it's extremely challenging and difficult. And there are not like representation can be really important, but representation without action is like just, it does nothing in a lot of ways. And so there aren't many people in academia in general across STEM fields who have the same ideas and values and experiences, and who we can feel connected to in our fields of science. And so just remembering those communities that we do have where we can feel connected, even outside of our work, and investing time and energy into those spaces is really important mentally. And I've had to learn that as well. And it's really hard, and it can be really challenging, especially if you are in some rural places and you know, like field work, or even generally doing your PhD in a very rural space. And so like virtual communities have been really, can you hear my cat? Yeah.
Totally good.
Yeah, I purposely left her out because otherwise she's going to be like all over me.
I mean, cats are going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah, for sure. I lost my train of thought, but yes. Mental health is important.
It is. And I know sometimes for people who are maybe not out yet or who are new in discovering their identity, it can seem very scary to go into LGBTQ plus spaces. Because if I know for me, and this is a personal note, but when I guess started to come out, I was like, oh my God, I can't go into those spaces. What if they reject me like all the straight people have? Then where will I go? And I've yet to find an LGBTQ plus space where I was rejected. So maybe definitely try go into those spaces, even like go next to those spaces for the start, because everyone's always been awesome.
Yeah. And you know, I think that fear is valid too. And especially in the intersection of race and sexuality and gender, we as an LGBTQ community can be pretty discriminatory towards people even in our same community. And so I think those initial fears can be are very valid for a lot of different people. There can be a lot of transphobia, there can be a lot of racism, obviously, and even like a lot of biphobia and lesbophobia, and just like, there's so much. And so like, I think that fear is valid because we as a community still, we still have a lot of work to do in making all of our spaces really inclusive to everybody. But yeah, I think it doesn't have to be. And like, I think the most rewarding spaces that I've found have been spaces where like, I've become really good friends with people. And then we have like our little queer friend group. And that's been like really healthy and healing. And I've found them not necessarily through an LGBTQ group or organization either. It's just, you know, the looks that you give each other, like, hi, hello, other person. I think it can be really important to continue to constantly take care of yourself and stay connected to who you are and what your values are. Cause yeah, it's hard for sure.
I guess moving on, because we've been talking for ages, but another topic that we wanted to bring up in this chat was talking about sort of quantifying gender and also women in STEM organizations. So I guess one thing that is important is how people talk about gender and how people talk about non-binary people, trans people. A lot of people want to talk about it, but they're not sure what to say. I guess, what is my first question? What is your opinions on women plus?
Oh, that's a very specific question.
Yes.
I think it's very interesting being in STEM in academia for a lot of reasons, many, but some of the like the most growth and learning I've ever done has been within my own communities outside of academia and STEM. And academia and STEM, because it's, you know, an oppressive system based in white supremacy, which enables racism, you know, sexism, like all of these, you know, ideas. A lot of people do not get a lot of experience talking about people and identities. And don't know how to have conversations. And it's not that these people aren't capable, hugely capable, because one thing that academia does teach you is how to have reasoning skills. And it's kind of sometimes surprising when I am like just observing in academia and in STEM, people like doing things that are related to diversity or inclusion that are completely using like weird, like pretending that they don't have the skills to talk about it when they do. I'm like, you can write a proposal and like write this really well-argued scientific like document, and you can't write a similar structured document or letter of support for people. Like the yep. skill set's the same, but you're just applying it in a different way.
Absolutely. Yeah, you've no idea how many people, so I'm an openly disabled person. You've no idea how many people will avoid saying the word disability or disabled when I've just said it. Like they will go out of their way to say something else.
Yeah, it's true. And like I think it's part of this oppressive system and part of this, you know, ideology of white supremacy. We don't communicate. We don't have conversations about people, because if we do, you know, we're all going to like, we're all going to become a community to like break down this oppressive system, which it doesn't want. It wants to survive. So like it makes sense from that like ideological perspective, but it's so aggravating and frustrating that especially these people like can't have open conversations about stuff. But anyways, I've also like to that thread been I guess disappointed is a harsh word, but yeah, kind of disappointed in some of the like cis women that I've met who've been my friends, who've known me, we've had conversations with about these topics and about gender equity in particular, because I know the intention's good, but there's that fear that prevents them from really being able to go a step further. And especially these like women plus organizations, like it just like I just don't know how else to say that it's just really transphobic. Like I'm sorry, it's just not like there's a huge fundamental knowledge gap in understanding what gender equity is. And I think that okay, let me put on my like educational hat really quickly and explain why. So so like women exist, trans women, cis women, we're all women. So like one, what is the plus really doing? Because y'all are women, regardless of whether or not you're trans or cis. Secondly, if it is to like include other marginalized genders. Like that's not what plus is. like that's really disrespectful that we all get grouped in as a plus to women when some identify as both. That's fine. I don't identify as a woman. I'm not gonna go to your group. I'm sorry. Like you're gonna talk about things that apply to women, and that's not me. I think that while the intention is good, the phrase women plus is not, it's not doing anything for other marginalized genders besides women, but then also adding a plus can be really transphobic to trans women if that's why you're putting the plus in there. Because let's face it, a lot of these groups are also ran by cis women. And a lot of the conversations in these groups don't even involve trans women topics, like topics that are even closely related to trans women. And then trans women of color, because trans women of color are hugely disrepresented or disproportionately affected by these conversations and like are not included and not represented. And as such, like there needs to be conversations around these experiences and breaking down barriers for these women. So yeah. And I think that there have been quite a few trans and non-binary people who I've met in STEM and in across STEM fields who have been huge advocates for communicating how hurtful women plus named groups can be. And so I have been doing a lot of work talking about how, like, we shouldn't call it women. We could either call it like marginalized genders, but then cis women get into this defensive, oh, like, oh, it's too long of an acronym, or like all this other stuff. And so, and a lot of these trans and trans people are like, well, okay, but, you know, it's either necessary or otherwise you're going to just keep harming people. Or you can have the group named after a common, like oppressive structure that all of us are not benefiting from, which is the cis hetero patriarchy. And that having a group that revolves around that particular issue, I think can be hugely beneficial, instead of calling these groups like non-binary instead, women instead. Like, can we all just be for like gender equity, which is dismantling the patriarchy and the cis hetero patriarchy? And yes, that would mean that other people would have to be in this space, like men. However, like, there are some men who also are being oppressed by the cis heteropatriarchy, because being feminine or being anything that relates to womanhood or, you know, femininity at all is bad. And in our society, you get bullied, you get punished, you get discriminated against for. And so that's not something that just affects women too. And that's a serious issue that I think would be way more productive to talk about in these spaces, because if these spaces exist to like talk about the ways in which like we are oppressed for not being men or not being masculine in a lot of ways, and even like and yeah, like I think that we could be a little bit more inclusive around our dialogue about these issues and attack the particular system that is causing the oppression of many different people, and not just cis women, would be way more productive, and it makes way more sense to me to talk about. And while it's nice to have non-binary in STEM, women in STEM, like, you know, all these various groups with their names, it could be really useful for people to just vent about their problems. There needs to be action, and we need to grow and learn as people, like, how to have conversations around changing this and just dismantling these systems that are oppressing people. Because yes, we need to emotionally vent to like get it all out, but we also need action, because otherwise, like, the same stuff is going to keep on happening. And how to get the action is to talk, to have conversations openly about different experiences. And that's just hugely lacking in the approach to some of these diversity groups that do exist. And it's also hugely important for race. Like, we need to be having these open communications about how all of our experiences are really different, but that doesn't mean that we can't know about each other's experiences. We can't support each other in our struggles. Like, we need to be doing all of those things. And we need to be learning from each other, so that way we can like all support each other and all dismantle the same system, because otherwise, if we aren't unified together and we're constantly hurting somebody else, like, we're doing the same exact thing that this system that you're talking about, you're venting about, is hurting you. You're doing the same thing that it's doing to you to somebody else. And that's just not what it's supposed to be about. Like, or at least that's not what I would like these conversations and these groups focus to be about. I would, yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, it would be, I would say it'd be lovely to have it. Unfortunately, a lot of these groups need to do work on their homophobia and transphobia before anything like that could happen. I'd love it to happen, but a lot of these, well, I know from my time in women's organizations before I came out as non-binary, I came across a lot of homophobia and transphobia, and they still do exist. And of course, massive amounts of racism and ableism as well. All of the bigotry.
Yeah, I try to have hope whenever I meet somebody who I'm like, yes, we're like connected, and then yeah, it's hard. I feel like a lot of the people I've met who I have been friends with have gone off and done women in STEM things, and I'm like, that's okay, like, cool. And they are, and a few of them are really trying to be intersectional in the way they talk about women issues in these groups. It's just I think our struggle is all based out of this system, in the same, you know, it's the same one. So but yeah, and I think the hugest part that goes into the learning on, like, you know, it's important to learn on your own, but I think it's also really important to learn how to have conversations with other people, especially with people who don't share your same identity. Like, language is hugely important, and how you use language and what you do after you learn something from another person is hugely important. And so when you are learning from another person, or when you are trying to have conversations around identities that also you don't have, there's a huge amount of, like, listening that you have to do, as well as just general empathy is the wrong word, but humanizing of people. Like, we're all humans, and yes, we can all go through very different experiences, and we can still support each other. I have to believe that, you know, we can, and we need to, in order to, you know, accomplish this goal of dismantling these systems. Sorry, I got so, like,
it's totally good. This is such an important conversation to be having, and I am for anything that is bringing down the patriarchal system. And I know we're kind of nearly running out of time, but I know you wanted to bring up some of the work that's being done on quantifying gender. Do you want to talk about that quickly, maybe?
Sure. Yes. So Dr. Caitlin Rasmussen and Beck Strauss have been kind of leading some efforts. They've mostly led white papers in the past for astronomy and planetary science on, like, quantifying gender in these particular fields. However, there is a group of people, also including sociologists, which is really important, talking about, like, good methods for scientists in STEM to use when talking about gender, because the data is really important, but also how you collect that data is hugely important. And especially around topics like gender. And if you are trying to advocate for gender equity in STEM, like, there are certain practices and ethical ways of quantifying gender in STEM. And so there is a group of us working on a paper to provide a list of both harmful ways of quantifying gender in STEM and good ways of quantifying gender in STEM based on sociology, which is, to a lot of STEM scientists, a soft science, but it's hugely important and very needed. And it's very hypocritical of a lot of STEM scientists to one, call anything soft science, but especially call sciences that revolve around humans soft science, because it's very condescending, and people are really important because people are doing science, and that's necessary. So and people are important. Anyways, But yeah, and so that's it's an exciting work to just do with a group of people who are like, yes, we need to talk about this because it's a huge problem in our fields. So
yeah, no, it's really, really awesome. And people should definitely go check out the white papers that they have out because they're really good. Check them out, especially if you do people research. Thank you so much, Skylar, for being an awesome guest. We have talked for so long. I can't believe how long it's been. I'm afraid we're going to have to stop now. So this has been Grad Chat by PhD Balance. We go live every second Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific. Episodes are then posted on our podcast, hosted on Anchor FM, and available on all major streaming platforms on Tuesday. If you want to find the Grad Chat podcast, just search Grad Chat on wherever you listen to your podcasts. Until next time, goodbye.